So tell me, Nick, how did this project Echoplex come about last year?
I don't know if you know, but I've been making music for many years, since the late 80s, really. But last year, I think I took a long break because I got married and had a family and all that. But I always knew I was going to get back into it one day. And it was finding an old keyboard in a second-hand shop that got me going again.
What's it called?
It's an Echo, EKO organ.
But that's a rare organ, isn't it?
Yeah, it's I believe it's Italian, and it was made in the mid late 70s, and it was just lying there in a charity shop, you know,
Interesting.
second-hand shop. It's there waiting for me, you know. Probably the first 2 or 3 months of Echoplex was pretty much just that, with some effects pedals. And from there it developed, and I got more bits added on, and you know, went from there. But yeah, that was what got me going again, was finding that keyboard, and it also half gave the project its name.
You said you've been making music since the late 80s. What kind of music have you been producing then?
Oh, I've been through it all. I think, to be honest, it was probably hip hop that got me going in the first place. Hip hop and sampling, I was very inspired by that in the 1980s. You know, it was still quite a new thing. So my first instrument really was a very basic sampler. And I went from there, and then I discovered synthesizers, MIDI, you know, sequencing. So I've been through making techno music, soundtracky type music, ambient music. But a lot of music over the years, you know. But I feel like now I'm into my 40s now. I feel like I'm finally making the music I was meant to be making, if you know what I mean. Everything else was kind of a practice leading up to this.
I feel that your music is a logical step forward for dub music or method in general.
Yeah.
How much have you personally been influenced by sound system culture, dub reggae?
Oh, that's totally part of the whole package with me, definitely, yeah. The old school, you know, I've got piles of records by Lee Perry, King Tubby, Augustus Pablo, you know, the real rootsy kind of dub reggae from the 70s is the stuff I really love, and Lee Perry's Black Art Productions, and so, yeah, that all is entirely part of what I do now. Oh, but colliding with the heavier industrial sounds and the suicide sounds, you know, it's all kind of intermingled.
You seem to have met all the people that formed the basic of dubstep
Yeah,
scene.
absolutely.
Have you been producing yourself?
I did experiment with trying to make dubstep on a, you know, in a PC environment, but it didn't really work out for me. I'm not, you know, you've got to go where your talent lies, and I don't think my talent lies in trying to make dubstep music. Leave that to the people who know what they're doing. Focus on your own strengths, I think, is the best way. But yeah, you're right. I met a lot of the founding people of dubstep. Very lucky to be at the right place when they were playing to quite small venues, you know.
For our listeners who haven't experienced this, can you tell us in short what was this scene all about?
It was a lot of people who were into like dance music, you know, had come through listening to drum and bass and garage and techno and looking for something new, something fresh and something. And the thing with dubstep was, in its earliest incarnation, it wasn't as kind of. I mean, now you can recognize what a dubstep track is. You know, it's
Yeah.
got the wobbly bass lines and certain types of beats, but it was a very experimental form of dance music at first, you know, and no one quite knew what it was going to become. And that was the really exciting time, when it was just everyone was just searching around, you know. And I think dubstep as we know it now is kind of focused on what I think was Lofer's vision, you know, his sound, which was that kind of very heavy half-step sub-bass sound, which was totally original when Lofer created it, you know.
The youngster.
And we were all kind of, when the first time you heard a Lofer track through a sound system, it just like knocked you off your feet, you know. And it was just so new, whereas now it's become a kind of a cliche. But that, you know, that was such a strong sound that was kind of pushed dubstep into a very specific direction, and it went, and that was when it really kind of took off. You know, that people kind of latched on to a specific sound. But the best bit for me was when it was still just the kind of, it could have gone anywhere, you know.
Well, which years?
2004 was a brilliant year to be clubbing, going to dubstep nights. That was the great year when it was really kind of, you know, lots of potential paths it could have gone there.
Did you miss, after this year, 2004 until 2010, did you miss a certain sound? Did you feel there was a lack in this originality?
There was various reasons why I sort of left the scene, as it were. But yeah, I for one thing, I thought I'd done my job. You know, as you say, it blew up, and then it was on Radio One and all over the world. And I felt like I'd been there when it needed me, and then I wasn't needed anymore, and I could step back. But also, I just needed to get away from it all and just find my own thing again. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I went through what year would it have been? The year preceding last, when I started Echoplex, the year before that, 2009, I was virtually a recluse. I took pretty much a good year out just to kind of clear my head, as it were. I'm fine with it. I don't care what I missed, you know. I was quite happy to just disappear for a while.
Where do you see your music? As a continuation of what?
I don't know. It's a continuation of everything, really. You know, everything I've experienced.
Because
I try not to filter anything out particularly.
Because it is quite different from anything we've heard.
Well, that was my intention, you know. I wasn't intending to make dubstep music. I never thought Echoplex had anything to do with dubstep music. But people seem to... I mean, I think possibly because I've made records for Punch Drunk, which is obviously quite a main label in dubstep, you know.
Yes, yes.
But I think it's more people coming to me rather than me going to dubstep.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't quite understand why people like it. I mean, my album, Intrusive Incidentals, was in Juno Records' top 10 dubstep releases last month.
What I found interesting about your blogging and your attitude toward MP3s was, while you were reporting on a culture that was almost obsessively focused on bass and vinyl, you were still supporting MP3 and the spreading of music via internet.
Yeah, it was a weird clash, wasn't it? And I remember, I mean, I would class Pinch, DJ Pinch, as one of my close friends in the dubstep scene. And we were kind of comrades in arms in the early days, you know. But we actually started out, we first met arguing over the MP3 thing, because he took offense to the fact that I'd put MP3s on my blog of dubstep tracks, and sent me quite a stern email telling me off, as it were. And that was my first contact with Pinch, you know.
Uh-huh.
But rather than just ignoring him or just sending him an abusive email back, I got into what turned out to be quite a meaningful discourse on the subject with him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And our friendship grew from that, you know. So there you go. But yeah, I was kind of what can I say? I mean, Pinch was a hardcore person, you know. He was on the club scene and he didn't believe in MP3s at that point, you know. Whereas I was a bit more open-minded, and I could see the potential for the internet to really propel dubstep a lot further than it was going at that point.
Is your music completely improvised?
Yeah, more or less, yeah. I mean, everything's done pretty quickly, you know. I don't mess around, you know, fiddling around with stuff afterwards. A lot of the work gets done before I press record. You know, that's when a lot of the experimenting happens. But then when I record it, tape, then it's done, you know. Whereas you tend to find with digitally based music, there's all that endless kind of tweaking afterwards, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of production is post-production now, you know, where you get a basic track and then you spend days or weeks just kind of fiddling with it and making it beautiful, you know. Whereas with me, once it's down, it's done, you know. There's no going back. It's just on to the next thing, you know. I like to keep it quick, and the thing is, my stuff, to me, it sounds like demo tapes,
mm-hmm.
the way they were in the old days.
Yeah, like, I know.
Today, a home studio and a professional studio, there's not that much difference because everyone's on the same basic system, you know, they're all on Pro Tools and digital systems, and everything's quite clean and professional sounding, you know. You know, it's a great leveler, you know, the playing field is, you can spend a few thousand and get a really nice professional, almost professional recording studio in your living room, you know. There is no need anymore to have rough sounding audio, whereas years ago when I first started, you know, your tapes generally sounded pretty rough because it was very basic, you know, four track tape recording, and there's absolutely no need for anybody to use that system anymore. You know, there's no need for music to sound rough and raw anymore.
Why do you think that's so?
Because of the technology, you know. There's no reason for it. Everyone can sound beautiful now. So it now becomes an aesthetic choice if you want your music to sound rough and raw, which I do.
Okay, it becomes an aesthetic choice
instead of a kind of a logistical or a question of limited resources.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. A financial choice, you know. I spent so long in that world of making very rough raw music, you know, and a lot of the music I liked was of that. It's coming back to Suicide, you know, it's a very raw sound. But then years later, their earlier demo tapes were released, you know, from the from 1975, the basement tapes or whatever. And I love that sound. It's just them with a tape recorder just playing, and it's so raw, you know, it just cuts through everything. And that just, to me, that sounds so much more exciting than the most polished digital recordings, you know. And that's what I'm always trying to get to. So I've made that choice to kind of deliberately stay in this kind of murky, analog, lo-fi world, you know. But that is a choice you make rather than a necessity anymore.
What about your project with Bassclef?
Well, luckily, Bassclef works in the same kind of zone as me. He's in four-track land, you know, so it made sense for us to do that together.
So is there anyone that you are aware of at the moment that produces the same, maybe similar feeling to what you're doing?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be a few people out there. I mean, there's a whole kind of pseudo genre called hauntology, which people keep trying to say I'm part of, you know, which is kind of trying to make this older sounding music. So yeah, I mean, there's some people I would think, you know, I'm sort of vaguely related to, but there's other ones that I think I've got nothing to do with, you know. I mean, some people have said I sound like, no, the name's gone out of my head.
Just give me a hint.
Can't remember. But yeah, there's a lot of artists, you know, that people say I sound like, and I don't think I sound like them. You know, I don't think there's anyone sounds quite like what I do, but then that's the way it should be. You know, I'm making music for me, you know.
Exactly.
No one else quite does it the way I want it, so I do it myself. I think everyone should be like that, you know. Look, so many people are trying to make music to sound like other people's music. You know, so many young dubstep producers trying to sound like all the other dubstep producers, you know.
This surely has happened before, you know.
Oh, it will always happen. It's been happening forever, you know. There's always going to be, I mean, I could probably have a much bigger profile and sell more MP3s and records if I went down a specific path and, you know, did a certain style, but I don't want to do that. I would rather sell 10 records but it'd be what I want to do, you know. I'm not interested in following scenes anymore. I've done all that, you know. I've chased all those different production techniques down, you know. I've learned how to do techno and drum and bass records and can't be bothered with that anymore.
Have you released anything prior to Echoplex?
Yeah, very obscure, but they're there somewhere.
What was your artist name?
Oh, probably one of the nearest things I got to breaking through was in the mid-90s. I was doing a project called Patchwork Man and did a couple of 12-inch singles, which were very much in a kind of hard techno style. And I was getting quite good play on, you know, from DJs and stuff. But unfortunately, the record label I was with at the time weren't really as sorted with their business as I thought they were. Everyone's time comes to them eventually, and, you know, my time to make records is now.
What kind of festivals do you get invited to?
I've only done the one festival. That was
Unsound.
That was Unsound.
Uh-huh.
The rest of it has just been, like, small, you know, individual gigs and clubs and things.
Would you mind being considered as a noise artist?
Well, I have been called a noise artist. I suppose to some people, I probably am a noise artist. You know, there is noise in what I do, and there's melody in what I do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure, you know, to my grandmother, it's all noise. So,
yeah, but there's a certain line, I think Simon Reynolds wrote once, that a record that has a melody in it can be more powerful than pure noise.
And yeah,
if you find
the best records are the ones that combine the two.
Exactly, the perfect balance between noise and melody.
Mm.
Is
yeah.
Something that brings the best results.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think I'm trying to find that balance all the time, but by the same token, I've done some records that are quite melodic and I've done some records that are very noisy. Depends what mood I'm in. I don't say, I mustn't have melodies in this or I mustn't have noise in this, you know. I don't think about it too much, you know. When I'm recording, I'm just kind of whatever feels right. And then it's only later on that I kind of go through the tapes and try and work out what was good and what wasn't, you know.
What was the mood you were in when you were recording this mix for Radio Student?
Well, the radio student mix is an interesting thing because what I've given you basically is an hour's worth of ideas that I don't have a specific release for.
Well,
so basically what you've got on that mix is all stuff that is unreleased by me, and some of it quite possibly, in fact, most of it probably never will be officially released. You know, so what you've got there is a big 60-minute exclusive extravaganza of Echoplex outtakes, and I didn't actually do that much thinking about it. I was just putting the tracks, you know, together, and it was just kind of working. You know, I was like, okay, just run with it, you know, and ended up with this big hour-long thing, which I'm quite pleased with, yeah. Because some of those, as I said, some of those tracks on their own, they're just kind of sketches, but they work together as this kind of flowing, you know, journey.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We'll be right back. Thank you.